Good evening and welcome to the Psychic Coffee Shop. I'm Ace tonight, and of course I'm setting down tonight with the techie with most, Techie Joe. How are you, darling?
I'm doing well. How are you this evening?
I'm getting by. We're doing okay.
Hey, there we go. It's been a day.
Yeah. So, it's been a busy day. It's a lot of get up and go and slow the fuck down. Get up and go and slow the fuck down.
Even with traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So, but we made it. We're a little late.
We made it.
Hey, Brenda.
Hello, Brenda.
She says, not going to ask how your evening was.
Well, that's not.
There we go.
So, right. You know, apparently 77 is a parking lot. With a lot of truckers, like, I don't know what the deal is. This is Tuesday. You guys should be on the road somewhere in the Midwest.
You'd think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was a lot of traffic.
It was. All right. So what you want to start with?
Well, let's go ahead and go with the big news. So the Supreme Court is now weighing a ban on sleeping outdoors, which could be a game changer for how Sacramento handles homeless encampment enforcement. It's a high stakes case for Sacramento's homelessness crisis and business owners seeking a new approach to the city's homelessness crisis. Sacramento business owner Michael Harris's homeless encampments outside the Exotic Body Shop have cost him lost sales and extra security. Not only is there no clarity, there is no consistency, Harris said. I understand that the homeless people have rights and I want them to have rights, but what about my rights as a business owner and taxpayer? Sacramento County District Attorney Thin Ho posted a photo to Facebook showing him outside the Supreme Court with California Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kalakis and entrepreneur Gary Tan. The amicus brief in the case follows a lawsuit he filed against the city of Sacramento for failing to enforce its own anti-camping ordinances. Quote, it makes me think he's looking where he's going to go after he leaves the Sacramento District Attorney's Office, civil rights attorney Mark Marin said. Marin is founder of Safe Ground Sacramento and has advocated against law enforcement response to homeless encampments. Where are these homeless people going to go? Marin said. They need housing. They have to go into housing. There has to be public housing. There has to be affordable housing. The Supreme Court case Grants Pass versus Johnson started in Grants Pass, Oregon, when that city began fining people $295 for sleeping outside. The case is now leading the highest court to clarify rules on enforcement in cities across the country, creating high stakes for Sacramento's high-profile problem and businesses seeking cleaner streets for their customers. Nobody's looking out for the small business owners, Harris said. Mayor Daryl Steinberg issued a statement calling for the court to strike a balance between enforcement and compassion. The court is expected to decide the case by the end of June.
This is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have problems in housing in Sacramento to begin with. The city owns a lot of property.
Mm-hmm.
I do not understand why we don't have tiny house communities popping up all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
While we don't have abandoned buildings becoming apartments quickly with mm-hmm. government aid, Lord knows we pay enough in taxes to be paying people's rent.
I mean, it's a problem I've never quite. I mean, do I think that, like, on this show we're gonna solve homelessness in one night? No. I don't. But this is more steps in the like anti-homelessness out of sight, out of mind problem, because it's really where this fundamentally ends up. Is we don't care where you go when you're homeless, as long as it's not here. Like, that's what the business owners are saying. That's what Sacramento is saying. That's what Grants Pass, Oregon is saying. We don't care where you go, but you can't stay here. And it kind of goes to, I believe it was Marin. I believe so. Yeah, Mark Marin of, oh, goodness. Safe Ground Sacramento. It kind of goes with where he's at is, okay, you don't want them here. Where do they go? Where do they go? Answer the question of where do they go? And then we don't have a problem. You can't just say, or you can't just do all these things to prevent them from being here. Like, we've tried busing homeless people out. We've had that across the country. We have tried, hostel architecture. So park benches you can't sleep on, sidewalks you or retaining walls you can't sleep on. Like, we've done all that. That hasn't stopped the problem, because it's not like someone woke up and said, you know what, with as hostile as it is to be homeless, I'm just going to choose not to be that.
Well, what gets me is there's 15 million acres of public land in California, BML land. They've invested $1.3 million to restore wildlife in Sacramento, California.
Like, we're
Why?
doing a lot for business and tourism.
No, this is public land. This is land we all own as United States citizens. Why are they not making it easier for them to move the encampments to BLM land where it's allowed on federal land?
Where's the financial incentive? That's fundamentally the problem of homelessness. If you really want to boil it down, and why, we're not making strides on homelessness, it just gets worse.
It
It just
does.
gets uglier. It just gets more bitter. There's no financial incentive to help people who are homeless. Doesn't make you money. You don't you and to some extent, there are municipalities. It's not that they're heartless. It's the last thing you want to become is the mecca of homelessness. Like, if Los Angeles, California becomes the best city in the United States to become homeless, or Sacramento or Grants Pass, wherever, you're one, gonna just encourage everyone to bust their homelessness to you. Like, you deal with it, you've got the answer. You're also gonna encourage people to move towards the nice place to be homeless, where you're likely to get housing, where you're likely to get, addiction assistance, where you're likely to get all these things. So fundamentally, and I don't really mean to laugh, I really don't. It's just one of those problems that it's like, I get it, but I don't. You don't want to become the mecca of homelessness. You don't want to be where all the homeless people go, because you're going to get overrun. Like, there's a sustainability of you as a city can allot funds to handle a problem that you have. What you can't do is take on, a national problem as a city.
True,
Like,
you
you have
can't, but
financial.
you also can't go the other direction and try to $295. These guys are trying to get $10 a day to eat.
Well, but fundamentally, that in turn criminalizes homelessness.
Right.
You're going to get fined. You're not going to be able to pay the fine.
Right.
Now you're going to have to appear because you didn't pay the fine.
Right.
So now you still can't pay the fine.
Right.
Now you're going to get sent to jail.
Right.
So now you're not homeless. You're you know, property of the state of wherever, Oregon in this case. So now you're not homeless. You have food. You have access to education, healthcare, dental, medical services, psychiatric and mental health services, all kinds of services. And in a sense, that's our solution.
Mm-hmm.
Like, somehow we're okay with that.
Well, see, like, we were never... I'm not.
Well, but I'm saying, as a like a gross population, it's out of sight, it's out of mind, they're getting the services they need in the worst possible way. Let me stress right. that. The worst possible way.
Right.
You know, like, hi, let's take someone who's homeless... and introduce them to, I don't know, rapists and murderers.
Right.
Seems like a bad plan, but okay. Your crime is you were homeless. You were right. too poor to afford right. shelter.
Right.
Okay. That's an interesting take on it. But fundamentally what the Supreme Court case is arguing is, do you have a right to be homeless? Or right. And I think that's the wrong question.
It is.
I really think it's the wrong question. It's fundamentally what we're going to legislate. Like, at least from the bench.
Right.
It's the question we're going to answer, which sucks. Hi, Shannon. Yeah, horrible spot to walk in on.
Right.
But this is where we're starting tonight.
Right.
Do you have the right to be homeless? Wrong question. It's the one we're going to legislate. It's going to become how we think about homelessness.
Right.
Which I think is the worst place to legislate from, because mm-hmm. it actually just perpetuates the myth that people choose homelessness.
Right.
No one chooses homelessness. No one chooses to lose a job and right. be fired. No one chooses to have a mental health condition. No one chooses to, like, any number of situations that contribute to homelessness.
Right.
What
gets me is 9 hours south, there was a Navy base. The Navy pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't need it. It was World War II. It was over with. Okay. And some people moved in and they formed Slab City, because the only thing that was left was the concrete slabs after the Army, Navy, whoever was done with it. Mm-hmm. And it's this wonderful town. It works on a barter system. Like, they have their own little shindig going on down there. Full of homeless people. Like, you can move in, nobody's living on the land, you plot into it. It's VML land. Mm-hmm. Around the same place that they've got this case at the Supreme Court, they have 15 million acres of VML land. Mm-hmm. You're telling me that these encampments can't be moved to VML land?
Fundamentally, probably not. I mean, again, it's not the project anyone wants to work on.
Right.
Because there's no money in it.
Right.
There's no money to be had for homelessness. I mean, right. you can raise money for homelessness. You can start a charity for homelessness. Right. You can choose out of the goodness of your heart to work towards ending homelessness. But the primary problem is... It's a feel good, but don't make me do anything charitable donation.
Right.
Like, I don't want to think about it. I don't want to look at it, but I'll write a check for it.
Right.
That's it. That's all the involvement is. You should feel bad about homelessness.
Right.
Just like we were taught to feel bad about throwing away like six pack Coke rings and you have to cut them up or the poor sea turtles will die. Right. You know, fine. Okay. Some of us are still sitting there clip, snip, snip, snip. You know, whatever. But you don't actually have to get your hands dirty. Not really.
Right.
And that's fundamentally where we're at on homelessness, is we can't incorporate that as, and maybe this is where the Supreme Court might have hope of stepping in, is if they challenge the premise of the question and throw it back that, no, this isn't about, do you have a right to be homeless? This is about, you have a right to be sheltered. And you failed.
Right.
So it's your responsibility. Now, herein lies the rub, is do you have a right to be sheltered? Do you have a reasonable expectation that if you are, for whatever reason, homeless, do you have a reasonable expectation of the United States federal government, your local municipality, your state government, whatever, to find you housing?
Well, in my opinion, if I own land as a United States citizen, which is what the Public Lands Act says, this land is owned by the citizens of the United States, then I have a right to be on that land.
But do you have a right to live there?
Yes.
I'm not saying you don't have a right to be on it.
Right, but no.
Do you have a right to go to Walmart, buy a tent, and move there?
Yeah.
This is your address now. This is where you live.
Yes.
Okay.
People do it all the time. That's where most of our RVers, our nomadics live. That's where, like, Slab City, it actually has a zip code to it. You can have a mail. There's mailboxes at Slab City. I do not understand why we're not recreating this. Now, Shannon brings up an interesting point about what they did in Finland.
They offered housing, no strings attached, with support staff, and they had very few folks go back to homelessness. Most actually moved into new housing after having a job with a livable wage. Yeah, that's a large part of it right now.
Yeah.
Like, didn't think, you know, McCain was really going to be a lasting voice, but wasn't he the one that said the rent's too damn high?
Yes.
Did not think that would be the lasting ring through the future, but here we are.
Right.
The rent's too damn high. And so it goes. I don't know, though. Here becomes the other problem is, like, with any of your federal lands, let's take just like BLM out of the, out of it, or Bureau of Land Management. I have to say that messes me up otherwise. Take them out of it. It's all federal land. If at what standard, though? Because none of this land's developed, none of it necessarily.
Right.
For housing.
Right.
You know, it's the standards of living then.
Right.
I mean, you basically make the federal government or any of your municipally owned lands, you make them a slumlord.
Well, you don't have running water,
you don't have bathrooms, you don't have heat, you don't have, you know, any of the things.
Right.
Effectively, you know, Grants Pass, Oregon becomes a slumlord. Sacramento, California becomes a slumlord.
Right.
Like, because this is what you're allowing people to live in. So that, I mean, like, I'm arguing if you say they have a right to live there, then at what point do they become a tenant? And at what point do you have to deal with this is a very bad landlord situation? Like, you have a responsibility to these people.
Right. And I think that is the response. Ouch. Like, that's the very clear, like, separation. Is like, no, this is BML land. You can come here and stay in your tent as long as you want, as long as you are safe. We pay park rangers to go look after the land already anyhow.
Okay. But what about the damage that gets done to the land by people living on it? Potentially in mass without the structures, the infrastructure, one generally was like, as in, and this is kind of where the Supreme Court basically went, was, do you have a right to shit in public too?
Right.
Because what facilities are there? Like, what do you expect someone to do at 2 o'clock in the morning in a tent in the middle of nowhere?
Right.
Like, nature calls.
Right.
do you have a right then to urinate and defecate in public? Became one of the questions that the Supreme Court actually posed.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the next part of it. Because that's a two-sided question, is if you say, okay, you can live here, oh, but now the criminal offense is urinating and defecating in public. Okay, well, if you can live here, then does the city have to provide that? Do they have to start popping up toilets and porta-johns and digging latrines in, like, City Park? Is that reasonable? Is that tenable? Is that really what you want for your city park in Sacramento, California, in Grants Pass, Oregon, in, like, Oak Hill, West Virginia?
Right.
Can you imagine that, like, go downtown, there's that little amphitheater area in the big green space, and right, a lot of the tents. And we hope a line of porta-johns paid for by the city of Oak Hill. Otherwise, you got random people shitting wherever.
Understandably, but that's what I'm saying. It was, instead of looking for solutions,
right?
I.e., Sacramento, California, they're surrounded by BML land. You say, okay, this is where the homeless can go and live for free. You have to maintain and follow the rules there. Here's your outside camping pack that has all the necessities. Here you go.
Yeah. Well, and it's what Brenda's bringing up, is liability is a big argument in most debates I've seen. Right. And it's where it becomes, is right, no one wants to claim liability for homelessness.
Right.
Everyone wants to bitch about it. Everyone wants it to go away. Everyone wants it to not affect them. Any which way you slice it, business owners don't want people sleeping on their door stoops and doing all that. Business owners will sit and bitch about, well, no one will come to my shop because they have to step over three homeless people to get here. Like, they'll bitch about all that. But they won't actually take any, like, no one wants the responsibility. Is if you have a homeless person on your doorstep, mm-hmm, are you responsible for them?
Right.
Is the city responsible for them? Who's responsible? Who is supposed to make this happen? Who's supposed to get them? Like, if your solution is the Bureau of Land Management land, who's supposed to get them there?
Right.
Who is supposed to make this a habitable community?
Right. Well, the humans have done it at Slab City. The humans themselves.
Okay. Which, I mean, I'm not saying this is a bad solution. I'm just saying, generally, these are lands with, I would assume, a number of camping, like, pre-approved, pre-designated, pre-set up camping spots.
No, it's dead land.
It's just dead land. So, right, turn them loose, they build it. Okay. Right. But that's still, you're going to end up busing the problem. And then what happens when the land's full?
Well, honey, if we fill 15 million acres with people, then we need to be sending some job hunters out there. We need to be, you know, like, they'll pull something that, yeah.
Well, but here's the reality, though, is how much of that land is actually habitable?
A good bit of it.
Okay.
Like, it was done for preserving.
Okay. Yeah. But no, I'm fundamentally saying, and then follows the question, and it's one that got brought up, and it's the terminology that always pisses people off, is the involuntarily homeless versus the voluntarily homeless.
Right.
Because we kind of have to make a distinction there.
Right.
And again, the terminology sucks. I hate the terminology. It ticks me off. But without better words, what if you just wake up one morning and you decide, you know what, let's go to Walmart and spend my last $30 and go live in Slab City?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a real good damn plan.
Yeah.
I'm flat. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. Like, I'm not doing it anymore.
And there's a lot of people that have done that. There's a lot of people who said, fuck this. I'm selling the house. I'm getting a camper. And I'm heading west.
Okay. Well, I mean, my question is, and it kind of also goes back to what Shannon said a little bit earlier. I was waiting to get to it. But she pointed out, you have a right to choose if you don't want to live in a capitalistic society that demands you trade a majority of your waking hours to corporations.
Right.
And so I kind of always find it funny that business owners are frequently, especially the small business owner, are the people out in like numbers about the homelessness problem. Because it can negatively impact the business.
Right.
And it's kind of this mentality we have is one starts with, we don't even think about the involuntary homeless. We pretty much assume people choose this.
Right.
That in air quotes. And then from there, it's a moral failing.
Right.
Like, you're too lazy, you're too stupid, you're too whatever. Like, we have all kinds of horrible things to throw at the homeless about why they're homeless.
Right.
But we never can seem to agree or come to a consensus over who's going to make this work.
Right.
Who has any responsibility, liability, whatever for it. And how do we make that happen without turning this into I want to kind of say Burning Man that never ends?
Well, there's a way to do it, but it has to be done right. It has to be done in different, like, if you want to be homeless, fine. Here's BMLN. This is where you can go. You can live out off the grid, whatever. We're going to allot these 200 acres for you to go and build your city.
Okay.
You know, if you want into housing, we've got housing for you. The moment a city takes possession of a building, it has to be assessed for livability and go into housing funds.
Okay. Well, but then we also have a number, like, that's great in Sacramento, California. I assume they have a pretty good war chest.
Well, it's real easy. We cut the Congress's salaries. That's where we come up with the money for this.
We
make them all live on their minimum wage of their state.
Who?
Senators, okay. Governors, representatives.
Yeah.
It's real easy. See how fast that minimum wage goes to $30 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But no, I like, again, we're not solving it tonight.
Right. But this is bullcrap.
I definitely think charging people for sleeping outside $295 is ridiculous. I certainly hate this is the question that the Supreme Court's been posed with.
Mm-hmm.
Like this specific question.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't see anything good coming out of this. I mean, at no point do I think you should have a right to be homeless. I understand the problems of flipping it around and saying that you have a right to be housed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there's any good answers.
Right.
But I hate that we're going to make this into a Supreme Court issue.
I hate that the Supreme Court has to answer this when we already have public health. We have a ton of charities.
Yeah, if we could afford the $295, they probably wouldn't be sleeping there.
Right. But, you know, they have a ton of charities out there that are set to help the homeless that have been paying thousands of, like a poor lady. I think this is in Colorado. Runs a weekly food kitchen. Like, mm-hmm. whatever she gets, she cooks, and she goes to feed in the park. And she got fined $1,000 per person that she fed that day.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming because she didn't have a food vendor's license?
No. It's illegal to feed Coloradans that are for free.
Ah. So again, homelessness laws, anti-poverty laws.
Anti-poverty laws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're legally not allowed to be poor.
Right.
Or more importantly, the people that are going to help you while you're poor mm-hmm. aren't allowed to help you.
Right.
And it's like, I don't know. I think I could stomach having that fine against me.
She did. GoFundMe raised the money to pay the fines that she was faced with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what she's doing now. She's working to fight that law also. Like, this is not going to be the only homeless law that comes to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
So they better make the right decision.
Yeah. I mean, I really thought we would have had a better solution. Like, I'm not claiming to know the answer. I'm just saying.
Right.
I would have thought we would have had a better solution by now.
Well, if you drive, the drive we done today, driving along, did you notice how many of those houses didn't have curtains on them?
No. I was driving.
Okay. Most of them didn't. Here's why. Most of West Virginia has become abandoned. We've had a population drop. We're paying people $8,000 to move here that'll work remotely.
Mm-hmm.
That has a remote job. Wouldn't it be better if we brought people here and that we could say, we have 200 people ready to go to work for you remotely, working your call center. Mm-hmm. Trained, equipped, and ready.
Again, though, I think what really scares people is the idea that you're going to take responsibility.
Right.
And it's going to fall through.
Right.
And then, okay, we brought you here.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to support you. And what then? Like, okay, we have to do it for a year. We can budget for that.
Right. And we're going to teach you how to garden. We're going to teach you how to homestead. We're going to teach you how to West Virginian.
Right. Well, but what I'm getting at
mm-hmm.
is once we take that responsibility, then
right.
What if that falls through entirely?
Right.
Like, for whatever reason, you get a population
mm-hmm.
that the call center falls through. You can't get them adjusted here. At what point do you say, or how does a state, for instance, mm-hmm. pull people in
mm-hmm.
on the promise of jobs and housing and, you know, a better life in West Virginia, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then what? Like, if this doesn't go according to plan,
right?
You just brought all these people here and you're going to what? Kick them out?
Figure it out. Teach them another trade. Trade is so needed right now in this state.
I mean, I'm just saying that, like, this is some of the problem with this.
Right.
Is because additionally, a lot of the empty communities that we have, like, mm-hmm. if you want large communities, so you can, we're putting 200 and some people here.
Right.
A lot of the communities that could support that
mm-hmm.
are abandoned for reasons.
Yeah.
Mostly the land is worthless. There is no infrastructure. Like mm-hmm. you cannot get Frontier to go out and fix the fucking phone lines. You can't get, you know, Comcast or Optimum or you name the cable company to go mm-hmm. out fix lines and make this a habitable community.
Right.
They will not run fiber to it. Dial up's your best option if you have phone service at all.
Right. But these are the companies that this state has contracts with to be in this state. And if those contracts are valuable enough to this to these companies, you tell them point blank, if you want to keep your contract, you will have these lines installed by September 1st and fully operational, or you will be out of this state. You see how fast they move. We bailed Frontier out of bankruptcy. The people of West Virginia did.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take our collection.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so a comment from Shannon. Banks and companies shouldn't be allowed to have property sit vacant for more than 90 days or they get fined, but that's going too far.
No, I think that's a wonderful thing.
I mean, well, but here's the other thing, though. And I've seen this one on TikTok, and I know I'm deviating and we got to get back on track, but now banks are putting minimums on foreclosure. Like, not only are they putting a minimum bid on foreclosure properties, they're also mm-hmm. doing a maximum.
Yeah.
And it's actually, like, big news in the foreclosure markets.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's basically changed a lot of the game. For picking up foreclosed properties.
Right.
That some of the banks, that this is an unsellable house, an asset we don't want, but we put an opening bid of like $70,000 on it and a maximum bid of $270,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not bidding $270,000 and $1,
mm-hmm.
no one buys it. The bank keeps it and tries again later.
Again, that's insanity.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, the state also holds a lot of land and a lot of assets
mm-hmm.
that are just sitting there that we are letting rot when we could put up somebody in there. Maybe they're not the best. Maybe they have active substance abuse. So that in part of their agreement to move in, and if they stay there for 10 years, they get the property, is they have to complete active substance abuse help.
Yeah.
We put the structure in place and we will not have this problem. Finland didn't have this problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, but we also have a fear of substance abuse. Like Right. It's like homelessness and substance abuse go hand in hand. It's basically the two issues no one wants to touch.
Right.
Because, and we've seen this in West Virginia, we don't want to do needle exchange, even though the science is there.
Right.
We do not want, you know, any kind of help and recovery and safe use harm reduction program at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because, oh God, they're popping up everywhere.
Right.
It's like, they were here all along.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, some people ended up here because you offer these services, and it is functionally a safer place to get high.
Right.
Like, call it what it is. But at the same time, it's not like you just, like, you're actually seeing the reality.
Right.
Like, you didn't have a problem till we turned on the lights.
Right.
And I mean, I know that's a horrible cockroach analogy, and it's horrible, but fundamentally,
right,
it's probably one of the nicer things that gets said about the problem, is you shoved it into daylight.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't just in crack houses and the backwoods, you know, trailer that's fallen down. And you know, it wasn't hidden behind closed doors and pulled curtains.
Right.
It there's now a line
mm-hmm.
out of a building.
Right.
You can see it.
Right.
And it's the reality of, oh my God, there's this many people with substance abuse.
Mm-hmm. And why is there this many people with substance abuse? Oh, Big Pharma. Hello, Big Pharma. Let's discuss your paycheck. But that's another subject for another day. All right. So we did get some good news out of New York.
Yeah. Funny moments in New York, right?
Right.
So former U.S. Representative George Santos on Tuesday said he is dropping his long shot bid to return to Congress months after he was expelled from the House while facing a slew of federal fraud charges. Santos, who is running as an independent candidate for the 1st Congressional District in New York, said he was withdrawing from the race in a post on the social media platform X. The announcement came after the disgraced former congressman's campaign committee reported no fundraising or expenditures in March, raising speculation that his campaign had failed to get off the ground. Santos last month launched a campaign to challenge Republican Representative Nick LaLota in the GOP primary for the Eastern Long Island Congressional District, which is a different district than the one he previously represented. Weeks later, Santos said he was leaving the Republican Party and would instead run for the seat as an independent. So, yeah.
Next, we go for his gay card. I want his gay card.
He is
a disgrace to our community.
I mean, the sheer drama he has created.
Exactly. That's why next we need to go for his gay card. New York drag queens, go collect it. I want to see it tacked to the wall of the largest gay bar there.
All right. Oh, maybe.
Maybe. And on to one of my favorite subjects. King Charles is busy. He may be taking chemo, but he's not taking time.
Oh, yeah. So Kate Middleton and Prince William received new roles from King Charles, including a royal first for the princess. Oh, so Kate Middleton and Prince William are taking on new royal appointments on April 23rd, which happens to be the 6th birthday of the Prince and Princess of Wales' son, Prince Louis. King Charles announced several new appointments, including for members of the royal family. The King, 75, appointed his daughter-in-law, Princess Kate, 42, as the Royal Companion of the Order of the Companions of Honor. In a history-making twist, she is the first Royal Companion named of this order. The Order of the Companions of Honor was founded by King George V in 1917 to recognize outstanding achievements in the arts, sciences, medicine, and public service. Members are limited to 65 at a time, although people from outside the Commonwealth countries can be counted as additional honorary members and currently include David Attenborough, Elton John, Anna Wintour, Judi Dench, and Maggie Smith. Princess Kate's new appointment from King Charles comes as they are both undergoing treatment for cancer. He has always had a very good bond with her. I don't think it is presumptuous to say that she likes She is like the daughter he never had. Royal biographer Sally Bettle Smith recently told People he shares with William an impulse to protect her. They are in this together, Kate and the King. Buckingham Palace said that King Charles was so proud of Catherine for her courage in speaking as she did to announce her cancer news on March 22nd. Meanwhile, Prince William was appointed by his father to be the Great Master of the Most Honorable Order of the Bath. The role had been vacant since 2022 after King Charles, who held the role from 1974 to 2022, acceded to the throne. The Most Honorable Order of the Bath was established by King George I in 1725, but is believed to originally date back as far as the 8th century. It is awarded to members of the military or civil service for exemplary service. So, yeah, and then Queen Camilla also received a new appointment from her husband as the Grand Master and First or Principal Dame Grand Cross of the Most Excellent Order of the British Empire. The Order of the British Empire was established by King George V in 1917 to honor a broader cross-section of society, both military and civilian. It comprises five classes, the two most senior of which makes the recipient a knight or dame. So the title of Grand Master has twice before been held by the monarch's spouse with Prince Philip and Queen Mary. King Edward VIII, who was known as the Duke of Windsor following his abdication, held the role from 1917 to 1936 as the Prince of Wales. Lots of new appointments.
A lot of new appointments. The Order of the Guard is the oldest on most of the civic orders in the UK, established by King Edward II nearly 700 years ago. So it's quite interesting. He's putting all of them to work, and he's like, ha ha. Now, it would have been customary for Harry to take the position of Order of the Guard because, you know, he's not in pecking order. He's not a working royal. I think it's hilarious that Charles said, hey, Camilla, why don't you do this instead?
Very much so. Oh, kind of a thumb of the nose at Harry.
Nah, I think it's a little bit more lower on the hand, my dear.
Well, there you go. All right. Lots of work to do.
Yes, and, you know, we're hoping to see them by June, both of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So astrometers are finally listening to astrologers and find something around Neptune.
Yeah, a team of researchers say they have found the strongest statistical evidence yet that Planet 9 is really out there in the solar system after studying a population of distant, unstable objects that cross Neptune's orbit. When it comes to discovering planets, finding them around other stars is actually a little easier than locating them around our own. Astronomers can watch for dips in light as planets pass their host star and block the light, reaching our telescopes on Earth or in space, known as the transit method, or by observing the wobble of a star caused by planets orbiting it and the knock-on effect that that has. Through these methods and a few others, we've discovered thousands of exoplanets in the last few decades, while the number of planets in our solar system has remained at 8. Discovering planets around our own sun has relied on two methods, seeing them in the sky and observing slight disturbances in the orbits of other objects. Venus, Mercury, Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars were all found through visual sightings. Uranus was discovered in 1781 by astronomer William Herschel after he noticed a bright object had moved compared to other stars in a survey and took a closer look. Neptune was discovered when astronomer and mathematician Urbain Le Verrier noticed that Uranus's orbit was different from the orbit predicted by Newtonian physics. He realized this could only be explained by another planet beyond Uranus affecting its orbit and predicted where this planet would be. But our discovery of planets within the solar system might not yet be over. In 2015, two astronomers from Caltech presented evidence that six objects past the orbit of Neptune were bunched together in a way that suggested they were being herded by something with a large gravitational pull. Despite suggestions the planet could be due to a statistical anomaly and selection bias, the team believes the objects could be moving due to the influence of a large object beyond Neptune's orbit. In a new paper, the team looked at long-period objects that crossed the path of Neptune's orbit, finding that their closest point of orbit to the sun was around 15 to 30 astronomical units, with one astronomical unit being the distance between the sun and Earth. So, carrying out simulations to try and discover what best explains the orbits of these objects, the team found that a model that includes a massive planet beyond the region of Neptune explained the steady state of these objects much better than in simulations where Planet 9 was not included. In that, in the model, the team included other variables such as the galactic tide and the gravitational influence of passing stars. So, though this is intriguing, the analysis does not narrow down where to look for such a planet. Thankfully, we might not have too long to wait on that front. Excitingly, the dynamics described here, along with all other lines of evidence for Planet 9, will soon face a rigorous test with the operational commencement of the Vera Rubin Observatory, the team concluded. This upcoming phase of exploration promises to provide critical insights into the mysteries of our solar system's outer reaches. The paper is posted on the preprint server Arxiv, A-R-X-I-V, and has been accepted for publication in the Astrophysical Journal Letters.
Very cool, very cool. It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting.
Yes. And there's lots of math.
There's a lot of math in astrology. There's also a lot of math in astrology. And we've always said that there's a gravitational pull that's not counted into. Mm-hmm. And gravitational pull, magnetic flare, like this is why astrology works. Mm-hmm. If there's more planets, we're going to have a meeting of astronomers and astrologers and sit down and redo some mathematics.
Yes.
Yes.
So how much would that throw off like an astrology report? Do you wonder?
I don't think it'll throw much off. I think it'll explain a few other things, though.
Okay, because like, you would be adding six planetary bodies.
If they're all planetary. See, astrology has always took into account the asteroids within our solar system. Mm-hmm. They could be accounting like some of those planetary bodies as asteroids.
Mm-hmm.
It would, you know, we have some classical houses that have two rulers. I'm quite sure they will succession out for a new ruler. So there wouldn't be a lot of change. It would have to be a lot of, however, observing, especially for tropical astrology. The one you're going to have the most problem with is Vedic astrology, is because Vedic astrology is based totally on mathematical principles. And if there's some calculations that aren't correct there, that's where we're going to have issues at.
Mm-hmm. Hey, there we go.
Yeah. I mean, we have room for 12 planets in the solar system before we have an issue.
Okay. It's just a reconfiguration.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
There yeah, but that would require another grand council of astrologers to sit down and debate the principles, look at the things that haven't occurred correctly, and go, okay, is that because of, I don't know, Mercury was indirect, or was that, you know, planet Delta being in retrograde to the Earth for 60 fucking years?
Or whatever the situation is.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. If anything, it's only going to make astrology sharper, but I find it interesting that astrometers are finally catching up to what some astrologers have hypothesized for centuries.
Mm-hmm. Is that there was more than meets the eye.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
I was just curious.
I know.
Yeah. But all righty.
But anything past Jupiter is not a personal planet, so it's going to affect generational planets.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did not know we had personal and generational.
Yeah. You have personal planets that directly affect you because it's going to be a stronger magnetic field. You have generational, and we see like 1969, you can actually see that occurring in astrology with where Saturn and Pluto was at its erectus. So you're going to have more generational effects. That's why, like right now, TikTok's all over Gen X, and it's like, nah, I could see that in astrology.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Alrighty. Very cool. All right, so let's get to the fun part of the show, shall we?
Absolutely. Am I the asshole for not giving my plus-size friend the queen-size bed in our B&B? I, 30s female, am going on vacation with four of my friends, 30s and 40s females. We go every year and always use a randomized selection tool to help us choose who gets which bedroom. The tool assigns the order in which we can choose. I got third choice, and my plus-size friend, Marie, got fifth choice. The first three of us all chose the queen-size beds. The other two got twin beds and had to share a room. Yeah, it sucks, but that's why we leave it up to chance so nobody can complain. Marie asked me privately if we could switch places so she can have the queen size bed. She is plus size, but in my opinion, not so big she can't fit in a twin bed. I personally have lost over 100 pounds and at my largest was bigger than Marie is now. I never once asked to switch beds when I was bigger. I therefore said no. She started crying and told me I was being unreasonable and that I, of all people, should understand. I do understand, but it's my vacation too, and I've worked hard to be in a body I'm comfortable in. I don't feel like I should give up my spot to accommodate her when she can still fit in the twin bed. Am I the asshole? Edit, we agreed ahead of time that the two people who got the twin beds would pay $75 less than the rest of us. It's just way too expensive to get a place with five rooms and five queen beds. Edit two, she doesn't have any mobility issues or other disabilities that I'm aware of. And edit three, it's $75 off the total of $400 for the whole trip.
I've done these shared trips many times. Okay. Not the asshole. At least no one got assigned the couch.
Yeah, I'm struggling for asshole status on this one. I think your reasoning is flawed.
Right.
OP, I think your reasoning is flawed. I think you're really, like, you don't want to do it, and then you have pulled out everything in the kitchen sink as to why not to do it.
Right.
When the simple reality is, I'm assuming y'all have been doing this. We go every year. I'm assuming this has been at least enough times that you've all had a stent,
right? Maybe
other than Marie, in the crappy twin bed.
Right.
So I'm assuming at this point, that what the real issue is it's not fair. Like, right. We do this randomized, we do it so that, you know, no one has to suffer every year or
right.
We all take our turn. We draw our lots and we get the bed we get.
Right.
Honestly, it seems like for Marie, this was a gamble and she knew it from the beginning and then hoped she could persuade her way out of it.
Right.
Now that she's been told no, she's not happy. Like, she was fine paying the extra $75 and getting, you know, one of the queen size beds. And this was a fun trip and she liked it. And then the minute she had to share in the discomfort side, not so happy.
Yeah, and OP has done the twin bed before her weight loss, and she was perfectly fine.
Well, I know, but I think that's part of the kitchen sink issue.
Right.
Is like, you don't want to do it, which is fine. I think that's fine. I think Marie had every, you know, right to ask, so to speak. You know, you can't do it if you can't ask, if you don't ask.
Right.
So if she wants to ask all three if they'll switch, then ask all three if they'll switch. If they don't, make your choice from there. I think for Marie, don't stick your friends with coming up with more money by backing out and wanting your money back. If you decide not to go because you're not going to be comfortable. I do think you probably have better options. And I like, depending, because I'm assuming there's no airfare.
Doesn't sound like it. If so, it's cheap.
Yeah, if so, it's really cheap. Assuming that the 400 isn't just for like a week in the B&B, because I could see that being $1,600.
Yeah, I could see that easily being $1,600. But, you know,
I think your $75. Here's my thing. I think take your $75 savings and go for, you know, at least less uncomfortable and an inflatable queen size mattress.
There you go.
And I think for the $75, you could probably cover that or at least get close. I would hope if it costs more, it would be worth the extra to you.
Right.
And then that's the thing you can pack and take, and you, like, maybe both of y'all with the twin beds can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then share it out.
Right.
So no one gets screwed.
Right.
Like, I get it. Like, I would think that a group of five could somehow manage to move or relocate for the duration of your stay to twin beds long enough and good enough that you could set up reasonably two queen inflatable mattresses.
That or, you know, one of you take an inflatable mattress, the other one move the two twins, the better, and you have a king-size bed.
Yeah, that's option two. A great option there.
Yeah.
Is take your twins, make a king or maybe a queen somewhere in there, make the larger bed with it.
Yeah.
And call it a day.
Exactly.
Like, I think this is one of those problems that's turned into a problem because no one stopped and thought it through. That, like, they're, you know, work smarter, not harder. You don't have to suffer. You can make some sacrifice, little sacrifice.
Right.
Take the savings, buy an inflatable mattress, collect $5 every year for, you know, whoever wants to use it.
Exactly. And see, you know, I've done large group trips, like 26 people, and we would book these places, and they wouldn't count like the futon as a bed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the place we stayed at when we went on family vacation, like the loft that had the big bed and then had the futon and the beds in the back. Those aren't counted in the description.
Yeah. Frequently not. Right. And it gives you some options. But no, I think in this sense that, like, you're getting too stuck on the form of the vacation and not really focusing on the fact that you knew this.
Right.
You all knew this was a problem. You've all had years to figure this out.
Right.
Figure it the fuck out, finally.
Yeah.
Like, make it not suck for everyone.
Right.
Or make it at least suck less.
Right.
Like, because you know what you're walking into every year.
Exactly. All right. So the poll is up. Your options are, yes, you're an asshole for refusing to switch the beds. No, you're not an asshole because you have played the game by the rules. Or everyone's shitty here. Or you're just a dill pickle. All right. So I'm going to give a content warning for our relationship advice. This gets complicated. As I always say, this show is for adults.
Yeah, if you're familiar with Reddit, this was behind a black box, not safe for work. So right. You've been warned if you continue listening.
Right.
My wife, 38 female, wants me, 39 male, to help our lesbian help get our lesbian couple pregnant. Failed in vitro previously. My wife wants me to get our friend, lesbian, pregnant. Throwaway because content in question. I, 39 male, and my wife, 38, have been together for since almost 25 years and married for almost 20. We have a couple we've been friends with since college, 38 and 35 female, and they're amazing. Godmothers to my second born. They've tried in vitro fertilization, no dice. I was the sperm donor after some convincing two times, though. Fast forward to 3 years later, and again, they've asked. This time, however, the suggestion is the good old-fashioned way. Again, all good friends, vacation with these ladies would take a bullet for them. I'm not shy. However, what they are asking, I'm not sure if I can do. They, along with my wife, want me to have sex and attempt to impregnate our friend, 35, as they have exhausted all their savings for the first two go-arounds of IVF. Yes, they could adopt, however, do not want to. The couple of times as the donor, it was the 38 female's eggs into the 35 female. Apologies if the math of it all is off, as I'll be honest, I'm not being exactly sure how all of it works mechanically. My wife does not want to watch, however, and 38 female does to witness the moment of conception. I believe this to be true. I do not believe either is bisexual. I'm a bit uncomfortable initially, but was warming up to the idea as I absolutely love these women to death. I do not really want her watching as I find that would be awkward. They've both seen me naked before, nothing weird, just happenstance. Nor am I shy, so mechanically it could work in theory. Additionally, I do not last forever in bed with my wife. However, do range it out to about 8 to 10 minutes if I'm not taking breaks. What if I accidentally make her orgasm? Do I masturbate prior so it only takes a handful of thrusts? If I do go through with it and she backs off not watching, do I just go hang out? I'm probably overthinking all of this. Obviously not a conversation I can have with just anyone. So Reddit. Thoughts, ideas, suggestions.
Turkey baster. Like, hello, this has been occurring. There's apparently a large market of exchanges of jars set in fridges for very short amount of time and are brought up to proper temperature and inserted. Turkey baster, dude. Like, do the math.
I mean...
Like, it's a scientific thing. It's not that quite simple.
Yeah.
A, the body being impregnated needs to be at the right season and temperature and all that. And you can map that out. I highly recommend you doing it on paper. Don't use an app. We know why. Especially depending on your state.
Yeah.
Two, you go and take care of business, provide the evidence, they do that, and then you go to sign legal paperwork.
Well, I think that gets a little further down the road.
Right.
Like that assumes a lot of things. It's not that my heart doesn't go out to people who have trouble conceiving.
Right.
And especially those who have exhausted savings trying to.
Right.
I get that. Like it's a tough position to be in.
Right.
I do think turkey baster is like, I know it's a horrible terminology. I hate it. It's always, but I think this no touch method, let's call it that. That makes everyone feel better. If we go no touch here, I think that's probably your better for everyone involved solution.
Right.
that's less problems for your wife. That's less problems for the 38-year-old partner of the 35-year-old who will be conceiving. I think it gets out of the ickiness of where you're at. Right. Is that it's functional sex. It's not intimate sex, really. Like, no one should be having a good time, which kind of thwarts the idea of sex in general.
Right.
Like,
it makes ick factor all the time.
Yeah. Well, and then there are the realities of, you know, funny things happen when two people right. have sex. Right. It's already awkward and weird and strange enough.
Mm-hmm.
Without having to feel like someone's cheating on their partner, if they enjoy it, if they don't enjoy it, that they're not doing everything they could to get pregnant. Like, there is so right. much room in the good old-fashioned way
right.
in this context. I think trying to do this with a little more, you know, distance and separation is probably your best bet. Right. I think it gets everyone out of the awkwardness.
Well, and I'm double checking myself because I swear I remember this. There is. I'm right. Okay. They've even progressed this a little farther. A short trip to Amazon.
Okay.
The 38-year-old can impregnate.
Okay. Well, she can definitely be there for the moment of conception.
Exactly.
But no, I, like, again, my heart goes out. I'm really glad that your wife wants you to help them and that you also want to help them. I think you've been given one avenue as an option to help them. And I think you forgot that, like, there's other ways.
You're right.
In addition to, and I want to say this separately, I really hope, this lesbian couple does get some counseling along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've tied a lot of themselves into getting pregnant, and I think that's common in couples who want children that can't have them.
Right.
And it really does start to cause issues.
Mm-hmm.
So if nothing else, even if you decide to help the old-fashioned way, I really hope they're getting some good therapy before. And maybe that can be, you know, a, so to speak, group therapy session.
Yeah.
So y'all can actually talk this out and one, to figure out if this is even a viable idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, which I suspect it's not going to be, that all of you get some stress relief. Because it sounds like this is becoming high stress for everyone.
Exactly. And that's not the avenue you want, because that reduces the chances for everybody.
All right. Yes.
So let me check in on our poll. And the poll is up. Yay. It's working. It worked. We're good.
Okay.
The poll is ending. The poll is ended. And the vote is, no, you're not an asshole for refusing to give up your queen-size bed that you want in the drawing.
All right.
All right, guys. So we are on schedule and broadcasting routine. And we want to pass it over to Joe. And I will be sitting down with Natalie this Thursday.
You will. It should be awesome. Mm-hmm. All right. So, of course, we want to thank Beverly Walker, Mika G, Kathy, Mary Winfield, Brenda, Shannon C, Shannon D, Lady Gwendolyn, Charles Shaw, Tracy Van, Caitlin Bell, and Devin. If you'd like to learn more about us, the show, or how you too can become a Patreon sponsor and receive all the wonderful benefits our baristas receive, please visit us at PCSPnetwork.com.
Yep, and just a reminder, Psychic Saturday is this Saturday. So with that, guys, good night, y'all.
Good night.